Station number 16730, Mr. F. Harrison, Reel 8.
Mr. Harrison, Reel 8. You had demi-pur, Mr. Harrison, prior to moving, obviously, into the jungle. What happened next?
What we had, all troops got there, all units got there, and then we started to really get organised with weapons and get everything, sorted out, so prepared to move. And then,
how long were you there before you moved?
Oh, I weren't there very long. No, it was a few days before the order was to move up. And I think the first little bit action, I think, was on one of the points on the road. Might have been B Company. I think they did a little bit there. And then further down, there was one point to be cleared. I don't know the hill. That beats me. I didn't know the hills. But
this is where
C Company went.
You reached Kohima at this point?
No. We're just on the way down. But this particular point had to be cleared because they were covering the road. And
what was the road like that you were moving down?
And the terrain
you were moving through?
Well, it was a hard road, but it was only third rate stuff, and it was like that. Must have been horrible.
Twisting.
Riding down in the back of a wagon. Terrible.
This was under observation from the Japanese.
Yeah, that road was. So that had to be cleared. And Cap Nolan and his Company C, they got that job. But they killed about 50 Japs, I think 50 or 60 Japs on there. But there was, some of them got killed the service. There was about nine or ten or something. Cap Nolan was one of them.
Were your motors giving support
to
this?
No support, no. They didn't ask for anything. We was just on the way down, waiting to go down. And all the battalion moved in then after that, along with the Berkshires. I think the Berkshires come through.
What was the terrain like that you were moving into?
Oh, very hilly. A big valley at one side, and this side went up, and then there was hills. Very hilly, 5,000 and 6,000 feet, some of them.
And were the jungle covered, or bare hills?
Oh, it was pretty bare around Kohima. It made a right mess of Kohima. It must have been a bonny little place, like at one time, the way they all talk about it. I mean, we never got right we're just on the outskirts with the borders.
So you're moving down this road, which had to be cleared.
Yeah.
What was the next phase?
Well, the battalion came down there and they relieved the personnel that was in Kohima. I think that was the West Kents. And what they call the Indians? I think there's like some Burmese and some of that. They relieved them and the Durhams took over their positions.
What date was this?
Norden. Can I quote that book there? One with Kohima.
It's the date we were asking.
Maybe about the first week in April. First week in April. And then they took up positions and relieved the West Kents. And I think it was Burmese troops. Some Burmese. I've never heard of them before,
At this stage,
we took over there.
At this stage, did you know what was going on in Kohima and what you were going into?
Well, we had an idea, because we'd been told what was happening, all the Japs that came in and why they had to be stopped. Because the Japs was reinforced by this the Indian regiment. But there was hostile to Britain, like, you know.
Had you been told how important Kohima was and why it had to be held?
Yep, yes. They told us, if this is broken here and the Japs get thrown to India, you don't know what's going to happen then. You don't know the Indians are going to go. I mean, they'll support a winning team any time, I think, the Indians. So we didn't look like winning.
Do you recall how the relief was made?
Well, it was just a matter of way. I mean, it didn't come up in trucks and say, right, you all go home. I mean, a bit of stealth and everything else, you know, and to take up positions and get the others out, because they were in an awful state when you saw them. I mean, they had nothing.
What were you seeing?
Oh, they were haggard. I mean, clothes-wise and everything, you know, they'd been half starved, and I don't suppose they've had a wash for 2 or 3 weeks, maybe. But, bah, they must have been marvellous people to stand that.
I mean, what did this do to you, to see these chaps coming off the hill in that condition?
Well, it made you think. I said, it's terrible to be like that, but we were a bit more confident than what we were when we were on the other camp.
So you got, at some point on the road, you would have to stop and move up to the positions.
That's right.
Where was your position in relation to the rest of the situation there?
What?
Your mortars.
Mortars. Well, we were on, like, the road was down the bottom, and we were up there. This hill came upside, and we were on the top of there, and we had our 6 mortars planted on there, just like on the outskirts of Kohima.
And where were the rifle companies in relation to yourself?
Well, they were forward of us, and it was way up, like forward and up, that way.
And they were on Garrison Hill, I understand.
Yes, yes.
So you weren't actually on Garrison Hill?
Not on Garrison Hill. We were on this one further down, and that's where the 6 mortars were.
Could you see the rifle company positions from where you were?
No, we couldn't see them, no. But
how were you able to observe, you know, where you were shooting to from where you were?
The officer would have an observation post where he could watch, and he would send back all directions for your mortars, what degree you wanted them on and everything else, you know, line. And that's all we used to do. We used to set the mortars up and just ready to fire, and we still always stand to and stand down. It was all that. Yeah, you never slept. You only slept when you could.
Did you take over the mortar positions of the West Kents? Exactly the same positions?
No. These were our own positions.
And had they been wrecked prior to you getting there?
Wait, I would suppose there'll have been, you know, so I won't be mortars here. I mean, you know, you just couldn't, somebody must have noticed that we get the mortars on here or whatever. Because the artillery is farther back, they have to be placed, and it was a good position, because we used to stand to at night in our little slit trenches, and we overlooked this ford, and while we at night time we could hear any, if the Jap was sending out patrols, anything like that, you all could listen. No, there was one day night about, you know, just toss the greenhouse just to say what would happen. You heard something, just toss a greenhouse. We know there's nobody about us.
How far were you from the rifle companies?
Oh, maybe a couple hundred yards. Well, 150 yards or something. Yeah, you couldn't be among them, to use your mortars. Of course, you'd have lost your mortars. Of course, the first attack, I mean, with the Japanese, the battalion got a bash. Did.
So you would hear what was going on without being able to see it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Communications between yourselves and the forward companies, or company headquarters, battalion headquarters. Where was that?
Ah, that was all right. Oh yes, we still kept in touch by wireless and you know and everything else. But
was battalion headquarters near to you? Near to your mortars?
No. That was forward of us. Yeah, before it was.
Was Brown still in command of the battalion at this point?
Yes, I think he got killed there. And Gibbs Kennett, I think he got killed there, Mr. Brown. Ah, yes.
Who was commanding your own mortar platoon?
Mr. Johnson.
He's still there with you. And you were dug into slit trenches, you said?
Yeah.
How were they arranged in relation to your position?
We had them mounted just, from here, over there, another one over here, and we went the six.
Just a few.
Yeah. Just
and your slit trenches were beside the mortars?
We weren't far away, so we'd get in there.
Did you have any head cover?
No.
And you'd eat and sleep in those?
Eat and sleep on there, yeah. Stay there, my
daughter. Where was your food coming from?
Oh, that was carried in. That was carried up. You didn't go away there. You didn't sit down the table or anything like that. That was, you always got your food. What there was. Because a lot of stuff at this time was being dropped. Never saw bread. We never saw any bread for weeks.
So, can you take me now through what was going on? It was a terrific situation, tremendous situation. And obviously there's been a great deal going on. What are your memories of it?
There was a lot of noise and screaming and shouting, and you know, it made you wonder what was going on. But you know, there was some fighting going on, but you just didn't know what.
Well, you couldn't see it, of course.
And you know, you felt as though, well, what we're doing here. But what we're doing, then we suddenly got to say, right, the mortars didn't come into the second counter-attack.
So, the Durhams had arrived and there'd been a Jap attack.
There'd been a great battle there then, and they never called for any mortars because it was close. I mean, it had been too close for, the second counter-attack, what the Durhams went with. That's when the mortars opened up with the artillery, and apparently we did quite a lot of damage.
What was happening at that time?
Well, it was pretty quiet, at that time, before the attack started, till we started. And
you would get an order from battalion headquarters?
When the fighting started, we started then. It was 1,300 shells we fired that night. Then the barrels of them mortars at the bottom actually were starting to glow because it's hot, it gets hot when they've been fired a few shells, but actually start to glow a little bit in the bottom of the 1,300. I would have fired anything, we went down that barrel, but apparently they did a lot of damage.
That's a lot of shells, mortar, yeah. Shells. Had you that number actually on the site, or were they bringing it through all the time?
Oh, they were coming through, all the people fishing, there was smoke and all sorts among them, phosphorus, anything.
So high explosive,
smoke? Phosphorus, it was, you also drop it all. Anything went down that barrel when it was fired.
Is this a moment of great strain upon each man? It's a tremendous rate of fire, isn't it?
That's it. But I think they were great that night for Tone. I think they did themselves proud. And when you got to know that you'd done some damage, why, it's grand. And at times, we were asked if we'd just drop a shell or two among the trees. And I've told you about a mortar shell. That's the trouble tone that, you know, before it becomes active, right? You could fire a shell into the trees, and as soon as it hit a branch, were ideal for clearing the field of what trees was left. There was very little left when that battle was finished. Oh, it was an absolute mess. That's all there was, just stalks. And a lot of old stuff was dropped by air at this particular time, even water, food, and everything else. I mean, you never shaved. I mean, you sometimes that one part, they sent a razor blade. It was a razor blade for a section. Why, I mean, you couldn't ask blokes to shave or anything like that. You couldn't make them shave. And the monsoon had started, and that made things worse.
So the monsoon was on whilst you were there, actually, in position.
Yeah, they had started. And it was awful. Ooh,
how miserable was that thing?
Well, you were wet. And you were wet a long time. I mean, you had no dry clothes. And they used to send us sometimes where you get some of this rum, like grain ink. You know, the dark grain ink you used to get, see? Just that, like that. Just to warm your throat, I think. Just, you know, trying to keep the cold out.
Was that a regular issue?
No. No, we didn't get that regular. No, this was just this particular time.
How accurate was the drop, the air drop?
Well, I would say the Japs nearly got as much as us. Yeah, it was, you know, there was where they caught you, those parachutes, you know, that laid all over and in a tray. What was left on the stalks?
What were they dropping?
Bread. Well, it was not bread. Like hard biscuits, water. Well, they dropped water, my ammunition and all. They dropped an ammunition too. Definitely a busy period, but after the broke the job, and that was the thing.
Before we go to that, this particular attack that we're talking about, which you were involved in, you say the noise was terrific, and
yeah.
Working mortars must be a noisy business.
Oh, yeah.
What effect does this have on your ears?
Well, we never had anything. We never had any plugs or anything like that. No, but we got used to that.
What noise does a mortar make when it goes off?
Bump, bump. It's just like a thump. You know, it's not a real loud crack, like. It's just like a thump. But it must have a flash of some sort, because it can be spotted. And that's the idea of lifting your mortar and moving somewhere else.
And you weren't able to do that.
Oh, I couldn't. You were static.
Did you come under fire from the Japanese?
Just the artillery. There was no more mortars affected us. I mean, mortars had hit us in the hurricane, but mortars didn't do any damage to us up there. But the artillery, and well, I think the artillery must have been poor as well, because they didn't fire as a battery like our artillery, or you know. They would just fire one now and again, and one over there, and one over there. It was spasmodic, like it was, and it was ineffective, I would say. And it could have cost them that if they had organised artillery and everything else. I think they'd have took a bit of stopping.
Did you ever see the battlefield?
Not really. I never really got. There was only one point at it, but I was way up on the top with some mortars. It was just as cover. And then that's where the mules went up, right up, you know, the ammunition, everything. And we'd do a big pit, a big mortar trench, like, you know, that's where your mortars was down, where it was filling full of water. And every time, if you fired a one, oh, the water used to fly away from the blaze plate, like, you know. And we weren't up there long, and then we came down, and Sergeant Morton and myself, when we got back down on the road, I mean, this is where the Japs had been broken, that's Kahime, but they weren't finished yet. And we came down, and my older brother was back with the Remy, and it, well, they were only what made at the bottom of the street, maybe from it. Oh, I nearly cried when he saw us, when he saw the state of us. He says, "I'll get you some clean clothes and everything else." So, well, they had plenty. Well, we got some clean clothes and everything else. And had one of these biscuit tins, somebody had biscuits in the primer stove underneath. There was rum and milk and all sorts in there. There was just warm, got some of that. Oh, it was great. But to get a change of clothes, no.
How close did the Japanese actually get to you? Did they ever get through the positions to get close to you?
Not really. I'm saying not really. They wouldn't have been far away. I mean, some of them, but they didn't get it anywhere where we, you know, we got a direct shot at them, anything like that, with a Sten gun, anything. And
you said that your Colonel Brown was killed here.
Tanky waterhouse. Might built like a tank. He's dead now. He lives at Ballycastle. I was just inquiring about him when I'm there. Oh, I see he's dead.
Did you suffer any casualties at all during the time that you were at Cahima? The mortar platoon?
Yeah, I was too. That called Tomlinson. He was unlucky. I mean, he was just putting his head round a basher like that to see, you know, to see what he could. And he got straight through there. It must have been on its way when he just stuck his head round, really.
What, a sniper?
It must have been a sniper. Mm. Percy Tomlinson and the batman. Mr. Johnson's batman, never saw him.
What happened to him?
Just disappeared. I think it must have been a shell, because they would, at that particular time, we were moving up forward ourselves, the different, and the artillery, just odd shell or something. But we never found anything. We never saw his discs or anything. So still parts of it's missing. So. Can he bring Morecambe, that man?
Were you getting information back from the front positions about how the battle was going?
Yes. We knew we were doing all right like then, because, I mean, the whole div was up, you know, up then. Berkshires and the Welsh, they were all in. Dorset, they were all the Norfolks. They all lost men. Oh, there was... quite a lot of casualties in the division.
Did you see any of the bodies in that lying around on these positions?
Oh, I saw Japs and all sorts, but I saw one or two of out that had been laid, but nobody touched them, went round them, because the Japs were dead, you know, they were booby trap. All the tanks just, you know, were tanks by this on the road, and they used to go around them. Oh, you didn't touch them. But till I got it all clear, then, but those jobs laid all over. Oh, horrible smell.
Seems that the smell is the thing that you remember most.
Terrible.
Any Japanese prisoners did you see?
Well, they were ordered to take some in the finish, but I think they only got about two or three, the battalion. I think what I heard that he said that they'd caught about five or six or something that had been eating a dog. When they shot two, and they got the other two to carry these other two wounded. He said, "You carry them two." That's about all they got. There was a Jap prisoner of war in where was it? It was a Chittagong somewhere in a hospital, and there'd been a group going around to have a look at them, like, I think. But they didn't take many prisoners, the Japs, the Durhams. I don't think any other battalions did either.
What are your feelings as you're going into the situation? I'm coming back to the time that you were moving in. You've known what was going on because you've seen the state of the other people that you were leaving. What are your own feelings at that point?
When you saw the Japs lying about?
When the West Kents were coming out and you were going in?
Oh, yes. Make it a bit apprehensive at times, like I said, it must have been awful. Yeah. I mean, we knew they'd been in all of this time and under pressure all the time, like, you know, and no chance of getting out, and relying on a drop from the sky to keep going and everything else, like, it must have been awful.
And yourself and others probably that you saw, is there a fear inside you prior to the action starting?
Well, I think everybody has a bit of fear. It wouldn't be human if he didn't. And it's afraid of being frightened. I think that's what keeps you going. I think I've always said that. So I says everybody's frightened, but he's frightened of being shown to be frightened, and that's what keeps them going. Oh, there's some heroes, but
did you see anyone?
Just on the spur of the moment.
Did you see anyone who did something special? any given time during the action?
Yes, aye. A little lad called Willie McKay and another chap, who were stretcher bearers, and I've always said it, them lads should have been decorated and they never got a mention. I'm nearly sure the mention in that book, somebody said they should have had the VC. They never got a mention.
And you actually saw them performing?
I've seen them, lifting them up.
Under fire?
Yep. And the lad, I bet he bought 8.5 stone, this Willie McKay. And the Scotch lad, he was one of these RSFs. He was well liked, was Willie and his mate, because of Corporal Ward. Somebody said it should have had VCs, them lads.
Did you see any men who cracked under the strain? Because it was a tremendous strain.
We only had one. That was down the Arakan, though. And
what happened to him?
Well, it was all right. We got him squared up, like. It's Sergeant Morton, a friend of mine. And this lad, he belonged to Birmingham, a lad called Hayden. He started screaming. He was frightened and all that. But he was one of these people that was all mouth in the barracks. He was one of these fellas. He wasn't a great, he wasn't a big fella. But he started screaming and shouting and this Morton about it at night time. Well, we had revolvers then and all. I had a revolver, the section commander, isn't it? He just put the revolver in, just told them nice and in an army fashion. They shut up as your bloody head will go, you know, that was it. Just kind of quieting them down. But he did, he started yelling.
Does it affect men around them when this kind of thing happens?
No. No. But, and that was the only one. I've never heard anybody else. No.
Coming under fire yourself, as you say, unfortunately it would seem to only be stray shots that were landing near you.
Yeah.
What's it like to be under shell fire?
It's not nice. I might never, that's obvious. But as I say,
your reactions.
Well, you hear a thump, see, of an artillery shell, and you're nearly told it if you want to get it. When you hear that, you're nearly told it to get in. So. Well, you get used to it, really. You know exactly what, if they're going to be shelling, you just look about, so why could I dive if anything did? That was all. I mean, some of these howitzers, you hear the crash before you hear the report from the gun. It's just, they're that fast. I mean, they go up and straight very high trajectory, the howitzer.
We've talked about you losing two men. Were any of your men wounded?
Pardon?
Were any of your group wounded? Any of your mortar people wounded?
Not a Kahame. No, well, we're very fortunate. We're very fortunate. Right. And we weren't finished at Kahame. We still had to go further.
What's your abiding memory of Kahame?
Well, I would have liked to say it as it was, which was, I think, being possible. But there's been trips there, very expensive, mind, very, very, very expensive. But I would have liked to have gone, because there's a memorial there, and the big stone was dragged down the hills by the Nagas. They were the hill tribes.
I haven't asked you about the Nagas. Did you have any assistance from them?
Oh, they're wonderful.
What were they like?
Oh, they were tall fellas, swarthy, you know, not real black, like maybe like coffee and cream. And very, maybe just a loincloth round, but lovely muscled fellas, and work. And they got this big stone down for the memorial bar. It was beautiful when it was finished.
Were there any with you on the top when the fighting was on?
No, we there were some. They wouldn't be pretty far away. It was you could always see them when it was quiet. They were wonderful people.
How long were you on the top with Kahame?
No.
Or in action at Kahame?
Yeah. A I don't know the exact date we come off, because we moved farther up after that, down in Fallamid, after, you know, we had a little bit of rest, and we went down in Infall. Yeah, no. Right, must have been the back end of April, I would think. Must have been the back end of April.